generators. They are that humming, vibrating, absolutely essential backbone of power resilience. Whether you're running a huge data center, a job site, or just want some security at home when the grid takes a nap, they're key.
Right.
And on the surface, it seems simple, you know, just turn motion into power. But our source material makes it really clear that once you get motors, electronics, and all these standards involved, simple becomes, and I love this phrase, please don't guess.
That is just a perfect way to put it, because guessing is exactly what leads to buying a system that will fail you. It's guaranteed to fail the moment you actually need it.
Right.
So, our mission here is to really pull out the crucial bits of knowledge that bridge that gap. We're going to go from the basic physics, Faraday's law, all the way to the really high-stakes decisions,
Yeah.
things like sizing for motor loads, power quality, what THC really means, and then we'll finish with the compliance standards you just can't ignore. NEC 445, NFPA 110, that kind of thing.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning then. A generator is, at its heart, an energy conversion machine. It takes mechanical energy from an engine, right? A diesel, a turbine, whatever, and it turns it into electrical energy. So, how does that conversion actually happen? I mean, down at the level of the magnets.
It all comes down to one fundamental process, electromagnetic induction.
Yep.
And for that, we have to start with Faraday's law.
Okay.
What's so cool about it is that the voltage you get out, the EMF, is directly tied to the rate of change of the magnetic flux. You need motion, and you need a magnetic field changing relative to a wire to make any power at all.
So if the voltage is tied to the rate of change, what does that tell me about, you know, how well the generator works?
It tells you that the stability of your engine is probably the single most important factor for power quality.
Mm.
If that engine speed is all over the place, the rate of change is erratic, and your output power is going to be junk. I mean, conceptually, you just have a spinning magnet that's the rotor sweeping past a bunch of stationary coils, the stator. And that motion induces the voltage.
That makes total sense. Rotor spins, stator catches the current. But what happens if I plug in a huge load? Say a giant air conditioner kicks on. The rotor must want to slow down instantly. What stops the voltage from just collapsing?
That's the job of the management system.
Yeah.
It's like the generator's nervous system. We're talking about two key parts, the excitation system and the automatic voltage regulator, or AVR.
The AVR. Okay.
The AVR is constantly sensing the output voltage the second it sees that voltage start to sag because you just hit it with a big load.
It reacts.
Instantly, it automatically ramps up the current going to the excitation system.
And that does what exactly?
It makes the rotor's magnetic field much stronger. A stronger magnetic field makes up for that slight dip in speed and the extra load, and it holds the output voltage steady.
So it's fighting physics in real time.
And it is. This super fast regulation is what keeps everything online. It prevents your equipment from tripping out and protects all your electronics.
That's a great insight. Okay, so moving up a level, let's talk about the different types. We mostly hear about AC and DC, and then things like standby generators.
Exactly. And for, infrastructure and grid power, AC generators or alternators are basically all you see.
Right.
They produce synchronous power. That means the frequency, like 60 hertz here in the US, is locked to the rotor speed. And the big industrial ones are almost always three-phase.
And what about DC generators? The old dynamos, I know they used to be a big deal.
Yeah, they're much less common now for power generation.
Yeah.
A dynamo has this really complex mechanical part called a commutator. It physically reverses the connections as it spins to mechanically chop up the internal AC into a DC output.
Yeah.
It's clever, but today we just use an alternator and then feed it into some solid-state rectifiers. It's way more efficient, way more reliable.
Okay, and this is where the tech has really changed things for like home and small business users, inverter generators. Why is that extra step, that AC to DC back to AC conversion, so important?
Because that complexity gives you huge benefits in power quality. A normal portable generator, its output is tied directly to the engine speed. If the engine hiccups, your power hiccups.
Right.
An inverter generator takes that raw AC, turns it into perfectly clean DC, and then uses power electronics to build a brand new, perfectly clean AC sine wave.
Okay, let's get right to the consequence then. Let's say I'm trying to save a couple $100. I buy a conventional generator for my house. Why should I care if the waveform is a little rough? What's the real world risk?
The risk is you could literally cook your expensive electronics. That rougher waveform has much higher phase four, total harmonic distortion, or THD.
And what hates THD?
Oh, everything modern, your phone charger, your computer, your TV, and
Yeah.
especially any battery backup or UPS systems, they absolutely hate it. They run hot, they're inefficient, and worst case, they just fail. Inverters give you clean power. It's non-negotiable for sensitive gear.
Clean power saves your equipment. Got it. Now, let's talk about the biggest mistake people make. Sizing. The source material was so clear on this. If you just add up the watts on all your appliances, you are setting yourself up for failure. Why is that so wrong?
Because you're mixing up running power with starting power. You can't size for the kilowatts, the kW, that's the steady work. You have to size for the kilovolt amps, the kVA. That's the instantaneous demand.
I need an analogy for that. How should I picture the difference between kW and kVA?
Okay, think about lifting versus carrying. kW is like carrying. It's the weight you can carry all day long, the steady marathon pace.
Mm-hmm.
kVA is the total power. It's the momentary capacity. Think of a weightlifter. They can carry maybe 200 pounds for a long time, but for that 1 second snatch lift, they need to be able to lift 500 pounds. You size the athlete for the snatch, not for the carry.
That's a great analogy. So the generator is the weightlifter. Now, what about that phrase, that scary phrase, locked rotor kVA?
That's the snatch lift. When a big motor, like in your AC unit, first gets power, for that first split second, it acts almost like a dead short.
Wow.
It pulls 5, maybe 10 times its normal running current just to get moving. That massive momentary spike is the locked rotor kVA.
And what's the immediate result when the generator tries to supply 10 times the power it was expecting?
A severe voltage dip.
Yeah.
A huge one. The whole system's voltage just plummets.
Mm-hmm.
And if that dip is too deep, say it drops by 25 or 30%, you get this catastrophic cascade failure.
Everything else just dies.
Everything. All the other electronics, the contactors, the controls, they see that low voltage and they immediately fault or drop out. So the generator, even though it's big enough to run everything, fails to start the one big thing.
So it's not just about engine horsepower. It's about having an alternator that's physically big enough with low enough,
alternator reactance.
Reactance, right, to absorb that kVA spike without letting the voltage sag too much.
Exactly. Reactance is its internal opposition to that sudden current change. A generator size just on kilowatt will almost certainly have high reactance, and it will just collapse. You're basically engineering for the first half second of operation.
Okay, let's talk about the application class, the duty rating. For a business, this is a huge deal. What's the difference between standby, prime, and continuous?
Yeah, this is critical for the lifetime cost of the machine. A standby unit is what most people think of. It sits there waiting for a power outage, and it's ready to run for maybe a couple hundred hours a year.
Okay.
Prime power is different. You can run it for unlimited hours, but you have to keep the average load around 70 or 80% of its rating. It's for variable loads.
Mm-hmm.
But continuous rating, that means it's built to run 247 at 100% of its rated load, nonstop, only shutting down for maintenance.
So if I'm running a remote mine or something, I need continuous. If I'm just shaving peak demand charges at my factory, prime is what I'm looking for.
You've got it. The cost and the maintenance schedule are wildly different for each.
And real quick on fuel before we get into power quality, what's the practical take on fuel choice?
The practical take is that the best fuel is the one you can actually get during an emergency.
Right.
Diesel is king for handling big motor loads, and you can store a lot of energy on site, but, you know, you have to manage the fuel storage. Natural gas is great for long outages, as long as the utility pipeline stays pressurized.
And propane.
Propane's excellent. It stores forever without going bad, which you can't say for gasoline.
Okay, now let's dive into what you said stresses modern systems the most. Power quality and harmonics. Let's go back to THD, total harmonic distortion.
Right. So we said THD is a measure of how distorted the waveform is compared to a perfect sine wave. And all our equipment is designed for that perfect wave.
So why is this suddenly such a huge problem for generators?
It's because of the explosion of nonlinear loads.
Give me an analogy for that. What is a nonlinear load and why is it so hard on a generator?
Okay, think of a smooth linear load, like sipping water through a straw. It's a continuous smooth draw. A nonlinear load, like a variable frequency drive or a server power supply, draws current like it's chewing gum.
Chewing gum.
Yeah. It takes these short, sharp, violent gulps of current right at the peak of the voltage wave and then takes nothing in between.
So the generator's trying to put out this smooth wave and all the equipment is just taking these weird spiky bites out of it.
Exactly. And the generator's AVR has to react insanely fast to those spikes. It puts incredible stress on the whole system, and it distorts the voltage waveform for every other device on that line.
So if you have a data center or a modern factory?
If you have more than, say, 50% of your load as nonlinear, which is common, you have to specify the generator for power quality, not just for kilovolt output. You need one with an oversized alternator and advanced AVR, or you're just asking for instability and failures.
Wow. Okay. This clearly takes us to the rule book, the compliance standards. These are not optional.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And you have to separate the installation rules from the performance rules. In the U.S., the baseline for installation is NEC Article 445.
The National Electrical Code.
Yep. It tells you the physical stuff, nameplate data, how to size the wires, what kind of overcurrent protection you need, all the safety disconnects.
So NEC 445 tells you how to wire the box safely. But for a hospital, a failure isn't just an inconvenience, it's a life safety issue. That's a whole different level, right?
That is a whole different level, and that is NFPA 110, the standard for emergency and standby power systems.
Okay.
NFPA 110 is all about performance and reliability. It classifies systems as level one for life safety versus level two, and it defines the type, which is how fast the system has to be up and running.
What's the difference between, say, a Type 10 and a Type 60?
A Type 10 system has to start and accept the full building load within 10 seconds of the power failing. A Type 60 gives you a full minute. For a hospital operating room, you better believe it's Type 10.
And it covers more than just that start time.
Oh, yeah. It mandates testing, maintenance records, how much fuel you need on site, everything required to prove that it will achieve that reliability.
And what about the generator itself as a piece of equipment?
That's where UL 2200 comes in. It's a safety standard for the entire generator assembly as a complete package. The engine, alternator, controls, enclosure, it's the stamp that says the whole thing was engineered to be safe together.
Okay, so we've sized it right, installed it to code, commissioned it to NFPA 110. Now we have to keep it running. Reliability isn't luck, it's just discipline.
It is pure discipline. The sources all agree on this. Reliability is built on boring, predictable routines. Checking oil, checking coolant, and maybe most important of all, checking the starting batteries in the charger.
Because a generator with a dead battery is just a big metal box.
A very expensive paperweight, yeah.
And the most common failures, I'm guessing it's not some catastrophic engine explosion.
It is never that. It's almost always the mundane stuff. Dead batteries, fuel that's gone bad, a tiny coolant leak that was ignored, controls that never, ever get exercised. That's why critical systems require regular exercise under a real meaningful load.
You actually have to stress it to know it works.
You have to. Load bank testing is critical.
Before we wrap up, we have to hit the big safety issue, especially for our listeners with portable units for their homes, carbon monoxide.
This is so important. It's a silent killer.
Yeah.
And the guidance from the CPSC is blunt. Generators go outside only,
How far away?
at least 20 feet away from the house,
Mm-hmm.
and never, ever in a garage, a carport, under an eave, anywhere exhaust can get inside. And you must have working CO alarms in your house.
And no backfeeding.
Never, ever backfeed into a wall outlet. It's incredibly dangerous. Use a proper transfer switch.
So what's the big picture then? We started this deep dive down at the physics level with Faraday's law, you know, this dance of motion and magnetism, and we ended up realizing that a modern generator is this incredibly complex, coordinated system.
It really is. It's a system that requires a super precise load audit to handle that insane motor starting kVA.
Right.
Careful spec writing to manage the THD from all our nonlinear loads, and just strict adherence to codes like NEC 445 and NFPA 110 to guarantee it works. You plan for failure at every single step.
That's a huge journey from magnetic flux to guaranteed uptime.
It is. And the sources really highlight that for critical facilities, standards like NFPA 110 demand constant testing and record keeping. It's a planned discipline. So here's a thought for you to take away. If a hospital has to meet that Type 10 10-second startup requirement, what kind of daily or weekly rituals do you think they have to perform to ensure that level of readiness? Because reliability is never an accident. It's scheduled, it's tested, and it's documented.